This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
And what a week it's been, Chicago. Do you feel caught up on all the news that's happened this week? I might need a little help. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's been a week chock full of stories like these.
Former President Donald Trump was in Chicago today speaking to the Economic Club of Chicago.
He degraded the press, doubled down on a stolen election, and talked about his love of tariffs.
The key demographic for both campaigns, black male voters.
Despite facing federal scrutiny, Dalton's mayor says she is running for a second term.
12 jurors and four alternates now selected for the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg. For this week's news recap, we were joined by Block Club Chicago reporter Melody Mercado, WTTW News correspondent Nick Blumberg, and last but certainly not least, WBEZ Data Projects editor Alden Lowry. First, we dove into Donald Trump's luncheon at the Economic Club of Chicago. Melody was actually there at Tuesday's luncheon, so I had her start us off. Here's Melody.
I would say about 500 people were present at this event. Trump received overwhelmingly positive feedback from the crowd.
Okay.
It was definitely a welcoming environment for him, although he did clash a lot with the interviewer who's the editor-in-chief of Bloomberg.
Mm, okay, so tell me more. What stood out from his speech?
So the interview was about an hour long, and John Micklethwaite, I always struggle with his last name.
So do I. So I can't even help you.
Our friend John.
Shout out to John.
John. So it really pressed Trump on his economic plan to enact a bunch of tariffs on imported goods, especially a 60% tariff on goods coming from China, and really pressed Trump in saying, you know, this could possibly create one of the largest trade wars in America. And Trump really shrugged that off and was like, you're wrong, I'm right. They spent about 30 minutes going back and forth on tariffs, and then things sort of derailed a little bit here. Trump really sort of went on different rants about versions of different policies and what he wanted to do with things like breaking up Google or just like different plans that were just seemed like thoughts that were coming to him in pieces.
And sometimes these thoughts were coming, you know, sort of after a different question had been asked, which yeah. I saw clips of. Nick, you too, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that was interesting is hearing Trump reference the so-called weave, which is this sort of, you know, rhetorical technique that he uses where it's like, okay, I'm going to get to the point that, you know, you asked me about eventually, but I have these three or four stops that I want to make along the way. You know, you have to wonder how much is that actually a planned out tactic ahead of time versus how much is this just kind of how his mind works.
Right.
And I say that as somebody whose own mind bounces around to a lot of different ideas and kind of have to keep them in the lane because of, you know, the job that I do. But, you know, you sort of see him bouncing back and forth. I thought that was really interesting. And even seeing him reference it so directly, it's
right.
like, I know what I'm doing. This is how I communicate. And this is part of the appeal that I have. This is part of the connection that he makes with voters. And clearly he was connecting at this luncheon.
So Trump said there was a peaceful transition of power after the 2020 election, and he wouldn't directly commit to one if he loses this election. Did you hear that part, Alden?
I did. And it was, you know, he seems to stay on message regardless of what room he's in and what the focus of those conversations are. And so there were direct questions about immigration. There were direct questions about January 6th, you know, election security, things of that nature. And he just kind of towed the line that he's continued to tow. And I don't know, I you know, even though there were specific questions and the primary focus around economics, but even in some of his question and his responses to those questions, he still would kind of touch on these other things. And so, yeah, I don't know, Nick, like you were saying, I don't know if it's just kind of just this broken record that he follows.
Yeah.
Or if there's something strategic there that says, wherever I'm playing, the people who really back me are going to pay attention, and I want to keep reminding them of the things that mm-hmm. they like about me and perhaps where my stance is. And, I mean, even some of the rhetoric was, I mean, just the mention of murderers and rapists and all of this around, you know, illegal immigrants and so on and so forth. There was a lot of that was mentioned when they actually talked very directly about immigration. Mm-hmm. And so, again, way over the top, but those seem to be the things that resonate with the people that back him. And every opportunity he has, he apparently wants to keep playing that message.
So Trump's made some disparaging comments about Chicago in the past. Did he talk about our wonderful city at all on Tuesday?
You know, if you looked away or paused the interview for just a couple seconds, you would have missed it. But he allegedly said that he saw a lot of vacant factories coming in from his hotel, apparently downtown, because that's where he stayed the night before, mm-hmm. to the Economic Club. That caused me to pause a little bit because I was like,
so what? He saw vacant factories?
Vacant factories that, you know, allegedly need to be filled with businesses and whatnot. You know, we don't
on
know.
On his way from Trump Tower to.
Right.
All those downtown factories.
Yeah, yes. All those downtown factories. You know, he could have been coming from somewhere else that we were not aware of, but he did make, that's the only comment he made about Chicago. He took a lot of shots at Detroit, which he was at the week prior. But I was surprised that he didn't talk about Chicago as much as I had expected him to, probably because he knew the people that he was in the room with,
yeah.
the people that, you know, helped build the city.
Absolutely. Protesters were there to greet the former president on Tuesday. Here's Atem Aboudia of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network.
Donald Trump is a racist, a misogynist. He's xenophobic. He's anti-black. He's anti-Palestinian. He's absolutely anti-immigrant.
So Trump's been met by protesters in past visits here, Melody, but how substantial would you say Tuesday's crowd of protesters was?
It wasn't very big. I would say part of that largely was due to the weather. The other part is a lot of people didn't know where this event was going to be held until a couple hours beforehand. So I myself was not outside just because of the nature of security of the event. Once you're inside, you're inside. But mm-hmm. my colleague, Colin Boyle, was out there. Said it was a small crowd, about 12 to 15 protesters. And these are protesters that we typically see at all the protests with USPCN and Hatem and his coalition.
Mm-hmm. It's also worth noting that police are still searching for a person who threw rocks at Trump Tower on Wednesday evening, breaking 6 windows. So while Trump was making his high pitch to the business community on Tuesday, Alden, we've been seeing Vice President Harris take a different strategy, including stepping up efforts to reach black men. So tell us what she's been up to.
Well, she's been up to quite a bit. She and many of the people that are backing her, from celebrities to other political figures, and they have targeted African-American men in particular. On Monday, I believe, the vice president released what she called the Opportunity Agenda for Black Men. And then a couple of days later, I think, mentioned that these weren't initiatives that would be exclusively for black men, but that in developing them, they were thinking about black men. And these are largely around things related to funding for business startups, mm-hmm. Education, training, mentorship programs, specifically around getting black men into jobs,
yeah.
Protecting cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Which focus on health, too.
Health initiatives, and then also legalizing recreational marijuana, which is still illegal on the federal level, although very few people are actually charged with those cases,
right.
Compared to, you know, 10 years ago. So, and then she's also been having these huddle-ups with black men in various cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the notion is here is a key voting demographic, and it has been for the Democrats for decades. And the numbers are, you know, sliding, particularly for
dwindling, yeah.
for black men. You know, the bottom line, though, is that there's still very healthy numbers, but I think there's an awareness that if the numbers aren't where they were, particularly for Biden in 2020, and even more particularly with Barack Obama in 2012 and 2016, that that could present a margin of victory. She's still going to win among black voters, but if that margin is not large enough, it may not be enough to help her carry key battleground states. And so they're really going after this. But she's gotten a lot of pushback. President Obama has gotten pushback for suggesting that perhaps part of the reason why black men are not supporting her in large numbers, or in, I should say, in large as large numbers as they have supported other Democratic presidential candidates is, you know, perhaps because they don't like the idea of a woman being president. And people from far and near have pushed back against that. I listened to Stephen A. Smith on a diatribe about that, and others, and you know, so
a lot of people saying, you know, it's a good start. Yeah. It's a move in the right direction.
Yeah.
But she misses the mark.
Yeah, but I think one thing that is clear out of all of this is that this is very clearly a sign of some level of dissatisfaction among black voters, and perhaps particularly among black men, with the Democratic Party. And so that's like a reality that that this is kind of unearthing. And so what she's proposing and what she ultimately does is going to be under much more scrutiny if she wins. It's going to be under much more scrutiny than I think Democrats have faced in the past.
Before we step away from presidential politics, one more headline. A judge sentenced a former Argonne Laboratory employee for his involvement in the January 6, 2021 riot, or what Donald Trump on Wednesday called a day of love. Schiller Park resident Robin Ryerson, who turned 70 next month, pleaded guilty to, quote, assaulting, resisting, or impeding officers. He was sentenced to 18 months in prison and taken immediately into custody, which is unusual. Normally, people are given some time to get their affairs in order and report to prison at a future date. But that was the judge's decision. All right, Nick, let's turn to local politics. Now, this has been going slowly, but a jury has finally been selected for the corruption trial of former House Speaker Michael Madigan. What was the holdup?
This is it's been a very lengthy process with attorneys on both sides. You know, the questioning for one single juror can go up to an hour. Obviously, this is an incredibly high profile case, and there's a lot of attention here. The judge actually warned attorneys that he might put a so-called shot clock in place if they didn't start speeding up the jury selection process.
Wow.
We do have the 12-person jury seated, and we have four alternates, but we are not done. They need two more alternates to serve in case of having to step away.
Right.
And they're not in court today, so this will pick back up on Monday, which means the earliest opening statements would happen is on Tuesday. But they're asking, you know, it's such a high-profile case. Michael Madigan was the most powerful man in Illinois politics for decades. So he is not someone who is coming in with, you know, a jury pool that's just completely, you know, fresh-minded about this.
Right.
There are a lot of people that have a lot of opinions about him.
Right. And so much talk last week about, okay, finally, we should be able to get these opening statements on Monday, the 21st of October. But according to you, that's not going to happen either. All right. Well, let's head over to South Suburban Dalton, where controversial Mayor Tiffany Henyard says that she will seek re-election. Do you think residents were surprised, Dalton, by her decision to run again?
Well, if they were, they shouldn't be. I mean, Tiffany Henyard is, if nothing else, we can count on Tiffany Henyard to, you know, kind of raise the roof and just, you know, let it all hang out. If you drive in Dalton, you'll see the Welcome to Dalton Village street signs with a bright, shiny, smiling face of Tiffany Henyard on it.
Yeah.
And underneath proclaiming her as super mayor. So she is not at all.
I got to go take a look.
I snapped a couple of pictures. I was like, okay, all right, go ahead.
Yeah, get a selfie with the sign.
So she is not lacking in confidence in the job that she's done and has taken all the slings and the arrows, and apparently they haven't affected her at all. But yeah, she's been under an intense amount of scrutiny. Federal investigators are looking into...
Yeah, walk us through the scandals.
Federal investigators are looking into her handling of village finances, and they've subpoenaed her political committee. They've subpoenaed her cancer charity. They've subpoenaed her live-in boyfriend. They've subpoenaed her relatives. You know, anybody who's close to Tiffany Henyard has been subpoenaed by the feds. So they're looking deeply. And of course, we know about former Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot being brought in. by the village trustees to take a look at her handling. They've been critical of
her extravagant spending.
Yes, the village trustees have been critical of Mayor Hinyard ever since she got in around lack of transparency and her spending. And so, Mayor Lightfoot, I think the key finding that was really just kind of blew you away. They were $5.5 million in the black, 2 years ago, and now they're about $3.5 million in the red in their general fund.
So, $5.61 million back in 2022, and the balance had dropped as of May 2024 to a deficit of $3.65 million.
Yeah, it's like an Eric Adams investigation in the Chicago suburbs.
You know, I didn't think things could get worse than Eric Kellogg and Harvey, but yeah, this is pretty bad. And on top of that, she's also being sued by the place that she's renting from. An eviction lawsuit. I think her next court case is on Tuesday. Her next appearance for that is on Tuesday. She and her attorney say that it's false. The landlord claims that there's $3,000 plus in arrears, but she and her attorney are claiming that no, they have no evidence that they are behind on rent. Yeah.
She's got a lot to deal with. Yes. If you've been following local education news for the past few weeks, you know that there's been a lot going on with Chicago public schools. On Wednesday, school CEO Pedro Martinez was grilled by Alders at City Council. Alden got right into how things went down.
Well, it perhaps wasn't quite as fiery as some of the showdowns that we've seen with the mayor, but it was pretty contentious.
Okay.
There was a lot of talk around, how we're going to get out of the budget mess that we got with CPS. And Martina spoke around some of the ideas, one in particular, the use of TIF funds, which has been something that both the mayor and the union have actually kind of put forward. So perhaps there is at least some level of synergy around that that would conceivably, get them pretty close to the gap.
And let's remind folks, they're trying to close that. It's a $300 million school budget gap.
Yeah, and I think in some estimates have it even closer to $500 million.
Wow.
And so some of the things that have been considered are this, quote unquote, has been labeled a payday loan. But to some degree, because the CPS, their financial picture, the credit rating is already pretty much in the toilet.
Yeah.
So any borrowing they do is going to come at very high interest rates. So that was a big part of the conversation. But there was also this talk around the fact that none of the special hearing that they had, none of the school board members, either the current ones who are sitting or the ones who've been recently appointed by the mayor, showed up for this thing. And that led into its own level of drama. And some council members who were, pretty much hard and heavy on the fact that they didn't show and saying we should be able to bring them in here. I think there was Alderman Beal even mentioned that they should be able to be subpoenaed, which is actually not true. CPS is technically a separate entity from the city council.
Yeah, so Alders, do they have any power to require or subpoena a board of ed member to come into city council?
They don't have the power. I think one of the city's top legal
persons, corporation council said,
they can't subpoena someone who is an agent of a different government body. So they wouldn't be able to do that. Perhaps though, if it's a direct employee of the city, they could, but not someone who is essentially attached to the CPS, to the school board. There was also this week the actual budget, which actually got passed, and a $10 billion budget. And so in that, Martinez talks about restructuring some of their debt, not filling vacancies, and using some additional funds to kind of help close that gap. So there's at least some talk around trying to get this thing done, but there's still a lot of disagreements with regard to the exact way we should get there.
Well, and I wonder whether, some of the fireworks that we might have been expecting, folks cooled off a little bit. Originally, there was a special city council meeting called for last week where they wanted to drag in, CEO Martinez and folks from the board. And eventually they kind of came to the agreement like, okay, we'll push this off until next week. So maybe, I don't know if cooler heads prevailed, but they at least weren't as fired up as they were the week prior. But, we're still waiting to hear from, the new folks on the board. There was the upcoming CPS, school board meeting
has
been postponed. So I think, everyone is waiting with bated breath right now.
And I think it worked out in Martinez's favor just because, again, cooler heads prevailing. He was the only one that showed up for the hearing. He kind of got to boost his portfolio a little bit, although several aldermen were still heated during the conversation. But he kind of got to show his creds a little bit and say, hey, this is what I've been doing, and maybe trying to up the ante so that maybe he can keep his position, I thought.
And certainly he's going to need to win over alder people if they want to try and take all this TIF money, because that is, you know, those are some pretty precious dollars that alder people protect pretty jealously.
I mean, literally each year it's hundreds of millions of dollars that is in some ways just kind of seen as a slush fund that's just sitting there waiting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a sign of how many needs the city has and how they don't have dedicated resources to fill those needs each and every year. But, you know, it is only so much money, and its original purpose is actually for things that people really want to see that money get used for, even if it doesn't get used for it right away.
Right.
Let's hold on to that surplus so we can make the economic deals that we need to kind of keep the city thriving.
Now, that wasn't the only thing that aldermen were up to this week, Melody. A new Fulton Market restaurant. It's on hold because the local alderman wants the name of the business changed.
Yes. So I started seeing this in the West Loop neighborhood about, you know, a couple weeks ago. The sign Bare Naked Social went up on a vacant building near the West Loop Library branch, literally right next door. So rightfully, neighbors were very confused as to what this could be. They knew that whoever was going to be in the space were requesting liquor licenses and public place of amusement license, but they were still very concerned because, again, Bare Naked Social.
What is that?
Like, what is that?
And it is B-E-A-R, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Let's
just putting that out there.
Yeah. Bare like the animal. So, and don't Google it. I'm just going to tell you right now. Don't Google the phrase at all.
Why, Melody? What comes up?
You know what? Google it and
do
you tell me.
Incognito window.
Alderman Walter Burnett said he had spoken with the owner. I had spoken with the owner before Alderman Burnett requested him to change his name. It was originally supposed to be sort of like a sports bar, affordable restaurant concept where visitors could come, have an affordable meal, and watch like really high in demand sports competitions like the U.S. Open, the Olympics, pay-per-view, like boxing fights. Mm-hmm. But then the alderman said, I'm not going to approve your liquor license or your PBA license until you change the name. So they're changing the name, and it's going to be a Mexican-American concept instead. The name is Aquila Cocina.
Okay.
And they're very ambitious. They're trying to open before the end of the year. So we'll see if that ends up happening. But crisis averted, it will no longer be Bare Naked Social, and that sign has been taken down from the building.
Oh, boy. All right. You've got an update, Nick, on an ordinance that passed a year ago in city council having to do with garbage pickups. What's the latest?
That's right. I've been reporting on this for about a year and a half now.
You've been on trash duty.
Waking up before dawn. the city has quiet hours between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. Private, garbage and recycling trucks are not allowed to make pickups then because it's noisy. They don't want to wake up residents, things like, you know, all the reasons you'd imagine.
Right.
And for years and years, this is something that companies have been flouting the law. And people have complained, but they didn't have a clear pathway to file a complaint. They'd try 311. They'd try 911, they'd try their alder's office, they'd complain to Streets and San. There were very, very few tickets that were ever written to these private companies in an analysis that we did. Alderman Daniel Espada of the First Ward sponsored a successful ordinance to create a special 311 code and give Streets and San the power to write citations and to demand GPS data from these trucks, because these trucks all have a track around them so the people at the company's office can see where they're going.
Right.
Complaint comes in, Streets and San says, hey, we got a complaint about you. Give us your GPS data. And if it's if it verifies that they were in fact making these early runs illegally, they could be fined between $500 and $1,000. So if you are
wait till after 7.
Yeah, right. If you are sleep deprived and angry about the pickups that are happening in your alley every week, there is finally a special 311 code for you.
Yeah, because as soon as you started talking, I started thinking about my own life, and I definitely have looked at the clock, and it was like 6:30, and I could hear a truck outside.
Well, 311 or 311.chicago.gov.
I didn't know my rights. I'm so glad.
Service journalism, Sasha.
Thank you, Nick. Let's steer the conversation over to public transit. Chicago's Greyhound bus station was set to close this Sunday, but a last-minute change is keeping it open for now, Melody.
Yes. So the company is negotiating a month-to-month extension with the property owner, which is a subsidiary of Alden Global Capital, which if people are familiar with that name, you should be because they own the Tribune. So right now, the lease was supposed to end this Sunday. So there was this big question of what's going to happen with the stop and what's going to happen with the buses that are there. But this week, this new development came to light, and it looks like for now that the stop is safe. But again, a month-to-month lease option is not a long-term solution. So the city will still need to figure out how to deal with this.
Yeah, where are the Greyhound buses going to go beyond this this lease? You covered one alderman's attempt to come up with a new location, mm-hmm. though, for this bus terminal. So what was 34th Ward Alderman Bill Conway's idea?
So Alderman Conway's idea is to move the station to the migrant landing zone, which is currently about a block away from the current station. Mm-hmm. That would effectively shift the station from outside his ward into Alderman Jason Irvin's ward, the 28th ward. He told me he had not spoken with Alderman Irvin about this proposal and had not spoken to Greyhound about the proposal, but instead sent a letter to the mayor's office, sort of, in his words, offering this up on a golden platter that could possibly be a temporary solution.
So, I mean, what was the reception that it got from City Hall?
So, Alderman Irvin did not know that this proposal existed, so he was a little surprised when I reached out and asked him about it. And then in addition to the mayor's office, who said that they were aware of the proposal but did not give any indication whether it was something they were actually looking into seriously or if it was being actually considered.
Yeah. Well, Nick, you were in Springfield this week where legislators were discussing merging the Chicago area's three transit agencies. What's the latest on that?
Well, this all goes back to, you know, the ridership that really cratered during COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Federal relief money came in to fill that gap. But the, you know, CTA, Metra, Pace, RTA, there's this combined $730 million fiscal cliff they're facing when that COVID relief money runs out. Which is expected to be in, you know, beginning of 2026. So there have been all these different reports and plans that have come out. And one of the ideas is, hey, let's do away with the current RTA, merge CTA, Metra, Pace, these three disparate agencies into a mega regional transit agency. The Senate Transportation Committee has been having a series of six hearings. The final one was this week. They actually looked both at the Chicago area as well as some of the challenges facing transit around the state. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, you know, CTA, Metra, Pace, RTA, they've really been pushing back against this idea. Mm-hmm. RTA has pitched some of its own ideas for reform, saying, well, let us be the ones to set fare policy, to handle customer service, to take the lead on capital projects. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because these are three transit systems that serve three different populations, yeah. that do three really different things. So this is not going anywhere anytime soon, but, you know, coming up in the spring session, it's expected that state lawmakers are really going to dig in on this. And we should mention, there's also the idea of not just filling that gap of the fiscal cliff, but along with merging the agencies, folks have proposed $1.5 billion in transit funding, because they say the system's been underfunded for decades. Yeah, this, you know, right. COVID just exacerbated an existing problem.
I also do wonder, I mean, how might a merger impact what we see right now? Like what local public transit looks like.
Well, and it's interesting because there's fears on both sides. There are folks, you know, from the city perspective who say if the suburbs, if the collar counties, you know, are you know, formulated as part of this agency, it could, you know, take away some of the service that folks in Chicago really depend on. Mm-hmm. You know, CTA does provide, I think it's about 80% of transit rides in, you know, in the region. And a lot of those folks are low income, black and brown, people who don't have a car, people who aren't able to drive. So there's some equity concerns there. And then on the flip side, you know, a lot of suburban county chairs are saying, well, hey, we get a seat on the board of Metra, RTA, and Pace. If there's this new single agency, we're only getting one seat. We're losing representation. Oh, we're losing right. our relationship. So, you know, there's people who are upset about this in the city and in the burbs.
So many layers to this issue, yeah. right? Yeah. Alden, let's turn to the new report from Chicago's Inspector General, the city's watchdog. Deborah Witzberg says City Hall's former head of business affairs created a hostile work environment. What details do we have?
Well, there's quite a bit.
How hostile was it?
Well, I would say, based upon the workplaces that I've been in, pretty hostile.
Pretty.
Yeah, yeah. I've been in. I'm being silly now. But but the descriptions
in
are,
his past.
Yeah, newsrooms are always chill and friendly. I don't know.
Of course. No yelling and screaming. And that. But actually, a lot of frequent yelling and screaming and people being disrespected, vulgarity used, even someone being denied a promotion because of their ethnicity or their perceived ethnicity. Mm. So there were some pretty egregious accusations being made in the report, and numerous people complaining about feeling uncomfortable. And this was rife with a lot of details around what appeared to be a pretty toxic work environment. And after some wrangling, the mayor's office, and I shouldn't say wrangling, but at least there hadn't been a response to the report and the accusations made in it, but that this official has been placed on the do not hire list the mayor's office has done.
Mm.
So
yeah, the IG's report also recommended that the state decertify a number of the city's police officers as well.
Yes, right? And that's related to the nine officers, I believe, that were documented by the Sun-Times and BBC around their involvement in January 6th and being members of the of the Oath Keepers. And so while the department has spoken against and Snelling in particular, superintendent, spoken against officers being part of hate groups, ultimately their investigation concluded that these officers, that the accusations were not justified. Mm-hmm. And so those officers have not been removed from the force. And so Wittsburg is going an extra step, not only saying should these officers not be part of the force, but they should be decertified so that they are not able to join any other force mm-hmm. in the state of Illinois. And the long track record of misconduct committed by Chicago police officers has included officers who actually have been let go, who actually then end up on other police departments.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we had the case of the officer in Springfield who was involved
who
in
was,
that.
Was bounced around several times.
Who had gone around. We didn't get a whole lot of details about why, but one of the fears is that there were problems, and yet that officer ended up someplace else, someplace after that, and then there was this very tragic event that happened.
Absolutely.
And so that's perhaps the need for there to be much more scrutiny around officers who show that, that perhaps they shouldn't be in one particular workplace. Perhaps they shouldn't be
perhaps
in any
you just shouldn't be a cop.
Law enforcement.
Yeah, much more coordination because it is such a scattershot system just based from municipality to municipality.
Yeah.
Let's turn from Chicago to Skokie now. Looks like there are some big changes coming to the Old Orchard Mall. And we're not talking new stores or restaurants, but housing?
Yeah, this is the section of the show where we talk about how my childhood is disappearing before my eyes.
I was
I was a Rogers Park kid, so Old Orchard was like the fancy mall that we went to. So Old Orchard Shopping Center in Skokie, they are getting more than 400, or set to get more than 400 luxury apartments across three buildings. This is a mall that's been around since the 1950s and, very traditional, sort of anchored by these big, Bloomingdale's, Lord & Taylor type places. But as have all, these retail malls seen a lot of changes. We were talking earlier about how COVID kind of exacerbated trends that were happening already.
Correct, yeah.
Certainly big malls, retail spaces like that. This is no different.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't grow up in Rogers Park and go to Old Orchard as the fancy mall, but malls in general, like that was my thing growing up. I loved it. And I still kind of do it with my kids. It's our way of hanging out, right? And finding things to do. And Old Orchard, when we moved here, was like one of the first malls that we found. Cause I was like, where are the malls in Chicago? Yeah. I can't find them.
Where do the teens spend time?
Right. Literally ask the reset producers. I was like, guys, you have no malls. Where are the malls? I can't live like this.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shedding a little bit of a tear too. And this development project, it still needs final approval from the Skokie Village Board, right?
That's right. It got preliminary approval. It will get a final vote on Monday. They needed to do a second reading of the proposal. It was interesting to see they got some pushback from affordable housing advocates. There is a relatively new requirement in place that Skokie have a 7% set aside. This only has a 3.5% set aside of luxury units, but this, you know, the deal was, or you know, the plans were submitted before this new law was approved. So it's sort of grandfathered in. But one of the things that was interesting was, you know, some of these housing advocates were pointing out there are 15,000 jobs in the village of Skokie, but fewer than 10% of the workforce actually lives there. So, it kind of gives you pause. It's like there's a lot of people coming in to work at Old Orchard and other businesses there, but they're not necessarily local. So you see where these folks are coming from in terms of wanting more affordable set aside.
And this isn't the only mall that's looking to reinvent itself. What's happening in Northwest Suburban Niles at the Golf Mill Shopping Center?
This is where I go two for two. Golf Mill is where my orthodontist was. So shout out to Dr. Robbins.
Your whole life is just crumbling.
I know.
Crumbling.
You're really just digging the dagger in my heart today.
Yeah.
Golf Mill, Niles, they had a referendum, I think 2022, where there was huge support for redeveloping Golf Mill. It's going to be demolished within the next 3 months. There will be a hotel, also some luxury housing. You know, the idea of kind of changing the retail models, maybe having these more experiential things or having smaller scale stuff, not the traditional go to a department store, buy everything you need.
Right.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting with this was that they want to, you know, Niles doesn't necessarily have like a traditional downtown. So some of the folks saw this, you know, redevelopment of Golf Mill as an opportunity to like, let's create some open space. Let's have some, you know, place where people, to your point, where people can gather, you know, and create kind of a public square.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to gather with my people.
Yeah.
Like, is that too much to ask?
No. I mean, it's kind of like my first time going into a Mariano's, and it was like all these wild, crazy things going on. I'm like,
there's a piano bar?
I just came to get some kidney beans. Like, what's all of this? Yeah.
Exactly. Residences may be coming to another well-known shopping area, the Mag Mile.
Yeah.
What's going on there, Melody?
We have a proposal here that passed out of the Chicago Planning Commission to turn 500 North Michigan Avenue, 24-story tower, right on Mag Mile, to convert that into 300 apartments, with 20% of that being affordable. I think that this is a great plan.
Housing on the Mag Mile?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Gasp. People will probably thinking like, where have I heard of this before? This is very similar to the LaSalle Street Reimagined plan that Lori Lightfoot and now Brandon Johnson is trying to shepherd in, which would convert a bunch of office buildings along LaSalle Street from office to residential and include affordable housing. I think that this is a great idea. I think the part that I'm worried about is that I have read that converting office buildings of this nature is more expensive than just building new. Mm. But we have to acknowledge that people are not coming to work downtown as often as they used to. And we have these big, beautiful buildings that are vacant and we should use them for something.
Right.
And I think housing is a great idea. And so we'll see if this actually ends up going through. It would be developed in two phases. So 320 apartments total and 238 apartments within the first phase. If people are trying to figure out, oh, I don't really know where this building is, the ground floor tenants is a Bank of America, a Vans, and the shoe store and a Chick-fil-A.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I mean, Alden, Melody brings up a great point there, right? A lot of people have been working from home for the last few years, not needing as much office space, especially downtown, right? Yeah. Just another change brought about by the pandemic.
It is, and it's one that I think that's going to stick. I think a lot of, you know, one of the challenges for companies in terms of trying to fill these spaces is that as they're looking for talent, I think the appetite among workers is now, if I can go to a company where I have the option to work from home, I'm going to choose that over an employer who's going to require me to come into the office 5 days a week, especially if coming into the office means traveling from some far distance out in the suburbs or something like that. And so the predicament of what to do with these spaces and trying to find some of these other kinds of uses for them is challenging, especially if these places were really built to be office space and doing something different with them. So yeah, it's interesting to see how this might play out over the years, but we're going to have to figure out something to do with these buildings.
I can't wait to see what happens with this one. Another building, Melody, that was supposed to bring more foot traffic down to Michigan Avenue was that temporary casino the Medina Temple. What is the latest?
So the temporary casino is unfortunately not doing so hot. It is bringing in revenue for the city within the first year. It brought in a little over $14 million in tax revenue, but former Mayor Lori Lightfoot had predicted within the first couple months of that casino being open that it would have generated, I believe, 13 to 15 million in tax revenue. So comparing that to where it is now, it is falling definitely below the expectations of what the city had. I do want to give Bally's a little bit of props here. They're trying to do the best with what they're working with. It's not a full-out casino in saying that they don't have a lot of the entertainment options, the shopping options that typically the other competing permanent casinos have. I think that is something that they are reeling with, and that's, I personally think, is one of the reasons why they aren't seeing as much foot traffic. Mm-hmm. They have welcomed over 1 million visitors, though, to the temporary facility. But Mayor Brendan Johnson had 35 million allocated in his first budget of tax revenue from this casino. We're not going to get that.
No, mm-hmm.
We are not going to get that. So I think the city needs to adjust its expectations a little bit and hope that the permanent casino will be able to shell out that $200 million a year.
Make up for this loss.
They got to land some residencies. Yes. Get us J-Lo. Get us you too. That's what's going to bring people in.
Bring Usher.
Please, I beg of you.
All right, so a couple other stories about changes in retail. Hardware chain True Value, which is headquartered in Chicago, announced it's filing for bankruptcy after 75 years. True Value is selling its business to home improvement rival Do It Best. Anybody
heard of
Do It Best?
I sure have, yeah.
You have?
Oh, yeah. I haven't.
I have not.
Yeah, they have a couple places, you know, locations here that are branded Do It Best.
You really are a shopper.
Well, that's me. I'm Mr. Handyman.
All right, let's turn to sports. All right, shout out to Chicago Bulls guard Lonzo Ball, who returned to the court Wednesday night after being sidelined for nearly 3 years due to a knee injury. I mean, the man hasn't played since like January 2022.
It's shades of Derrick Rose.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. So his first shot on Wednesday was a three-pointer. Right. Okay, Lonzo.
All right.
I am headed to tonight's preseason game against the Cavs.
Nice.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
It kind of came about last minute, and all of a sudden I'm going, and I can't wait to see him in action.
I just wish they had held on to DeMar DeRozan just for one more season.
Can't.
The best Bulls basketball I've seen in many years happened when,
I'm so sad about
Lonzo
that.
Ball, DeRozan,
Levine
and Vucevic were all on the court together.
Yes.
And so this was an opportunity. They've gotten some of their young folks that have developed more also.
I know. I'm going tonight, but I'm also going to be like, no, DeMar.
Yeah, I was seeing the betting line on the Bulls this season. It's like, nah, they're not expected to be so hot.
And you got
to
understand, I have a previous relationship with DeMar. He was a Toronto Raptor.
Right.
So I'm really like, come on, dude. Yeah.
Although I would pause on thinking that the Bulls are still a sunken ship.
Okay.
Because Ball is not only a great facilitator, but is actually a really incredibly good defensive player.
Yes.
And so he's one of those guys who can really make a team a lot better just by his presence on the floor. So I think the Bulls have a shot to at least be decent.
This is sounding positive.
We
I
love
like
to
it.
Hear it.
I love to hear it. On the other hand here, another sports story. Frustrating season for White Sox fans.
Oh, boy. To say the least.
Well, it turns out the team's owner may have had it with them as well, right? There are reports that Jerry Reinsdorf is open to selling the Southside franchise. I mean, do you think it's just about just one disappointing baseball season, or might it have something to do with that new stadium that he was hoping to get in the South Loop?
Interesting.
Leverage.
Jerry Reinsdorf trying to get leverage from state lawmakers to get more money? He would never.
If you think about it from a business perspective, the worst time to sell might be coming off of a 121 loss season.
Yeah, right.
You know, like who's going to want to spend big bucks
for... Yeah, sell high. Well, you also have to wonder, like, how, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is 88 years old. He is a bazillionaire. And, you know, at this point, you know, obviously, I think
how much money is that, Nick?
You know, it's a 5 quadrazillion. At this point, it's like how much of us, you know, obviously there's a great deal of personal investment. He's been with this team for many years. But, you know, you have to think maybe he's taking the long view here and saying, if this is time for me to sell, this is time for me to sell.
We'll keep an eye on this story as it develops. I just have to say that, even though we know what's happening here. If you're looking for something to do this weekend closer to home, you might consider Open House Chicago. That's where you can tour more than 170 of the city's most historic buildings for free. Tell us about the 2-day event, Melody.
Yeah, I love this because I'm nosy. And so I always tell people, if you've ever passed buildings throughout Chicago and you're like, what does that look like inside? I just want to just invite me in for coffee or something. This is your chance. This is your chance. And there are tons of sites all over the city.
Yeah, like 20 plus neighborhoods.
Yes. All of my colleagues at Block Club, we put together a comprehensive list. I believe there's 15 different lists that we put together of various neighborhoods. Take the time to go. And I will say, obviously I'm biased. I cover downtown. Love the buildings downtown. Love the architecture downtown. Mm-hmm. But there's some really cool spots throughout the south side and the north side and west side in here that I was like, take your time, be nosy throughout the whole city.
Right. I was surprised Steppenwolf was on the list. I'm like, you guys have never opened your doors for open
No, you got to buy a ticket, man.
I'm just saying.
Got to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick before we go, they're celebrating at the University of Chicago. The school now has more than 100 Nobel Prize winners. James Robinson became the 101st, winning the Nobel in Economics for Research on why some countries are rich and others poor, and documenting that freer, open societies are more likely to prosper. So congratulations to Professor Robinson. Anyone want to guess how many U of C scholars have received a Nobel Prize in Economics?
Ooh.
Lisa Labas has her hand up. Ma'am, it's not your turn
yet. Star student. man, let's see.
Wrong. It's 34. And with that, it's time to go. My thanks to WDTW's Nick Blumberg, WBEZ's Alden Lowry, and Block Club Chicago's Melody Mercado. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guffman. It was edited by Meha Ahmed, and it was mixed by Linnea Dominic. Reset brings you all the top stories of the week on Fridays for our weekly news recap. We not only bring you those stories, but context and more. Now, if this is what you're looking for, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss another one. Plus, you can check out our website at wbez.org/reset to listen to more conversations that we didn't get to on our recap. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.